call the next case, U.S. v. McNeil, 08-1772. Mr. Anderson.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. Let counsel be seated first.
Okay. We didn't want to go without you, counsel.
May it please the Court, I'm Kent Anderson with the Federal Defender's Office of the Central District of Illinois, representing the appellant, Alan McNeil. Now, Mr. McNeil pled guilty to being a felon in possession of a firearm. As part of the plea agreement, the government agreed to recommend that his sentence be concurrent with the state sentences he received based on the same conduct. And then, of course, Mr. McNeil made the same request in his sentencing memorandum, and then both parties orally did at the sentencing hearing, and nobody ever limited that request, saying that he just wanted it partially concurrent. The judge then imposed sentences, the federal sentence concurrent with two of the state sentences that Mr. McNeil had received, apparently based on his conduct, at least in part, they were parole revocations. But unfortunately, even though there was no mention of being partially concurrent, that's effectively what the judge did because Mr. McNeil is not going to get any credit from the Bureau of Prisons based on the time that he had already served on the state sentences. The only way the judge could have given him credit for that would have been to reduce the federal sentence.
And didn't he do that by going well below the guidelines?
He did go well below the guidelines, but not for that reason. He did it to give Mr. McNeil adequate credit for acceptance of responsibility because otherwise the guideline range was straddling the statutory maximum, and Mr. McNeil's credit with acceptance was somewhat extraordinary in that he told the officers that he had a gun and where to find it when they probably wouldn't have found it otherwise. And in addition, the court found that Mr. McNeil's criminal history was somewhat overstated. So those were the reasons for the below-guideline sentence.
Well, the sentence that he didn't say anything about is only, what, 90 days or 3 months, something like that?
That was the third sentence. Yes, you're right, Your Honor. It was three months.
Isn't it likely that expired before any of this happened?
After taking a closer look at the record, it is possible. It's not clear on the record, but that is possible.
Yeah, because that was the question I had. Do you have any evidence or any proof that the sentence in the 1846 case had not been discharged before his federal sentencing?
The only information I have is what's in the pre-sentence report.
There would be documents, though, wouldn't there, with the Wisconsin Department of Corrections that would reflect credit was given or not given?
I would think so. And I would think perhaps the probation officer might have obtained those before writing the report, but they were never filed with the court, so they didn't become part of the record.
And it's true that the pre-sentence report does not mention whether that case, that 04 case had been discharged or not.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And you don't have any cases that require a federal sentencing court to take into consideration McNeil's pre-sentencing incarceration on a state charge when imposing a federal sentence, do you?
If the argument is raised, the court would have to consider it, but what the court has to do after it considers it is completely within the court's discretion.
Right, so it's not mandatory.
That is correct, Your Honor. It just appears in this case it was trying to make it
discretionary.
Within its discretion, so this court should remand this Mr. McNeil's case so the court can effectuate that intent. And if the court, on the other hand, finds that the intent is somewhat ambiguous, that this court should still remand Mr. McNeil's case in order for the district court to clear up that ambiguity and, if appropriate, resentence Mr. McNeil.
Was there any request made to figure out what was going on with that earlier state court case, that 1846 case?
No, there was not. No further questions. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Lipscomb?
Thank you, Judge. May it please the Court, my name is Bill Lipscomb. I am an assistant United States attorney in Milwaukee and was trial counsel here. Just looking back at the sentencing proceedings, really the question here is whether what the court did was reasonable. And looking at the evidence, the information the court had before it, which was the pre-sentence report, the court was told essentially there were two sentences the court could make concurrent. Those were the 01 cases that had recently been adjudicated in state court. There was no reference to the 04 case. The court simply followed the PSR, the pre-sentence report, and it makes sense that no party said anything about it at the time, the government or the defendant or the court or the probation office, when the court only made it concurrent with the 01 cases, because if you look back, it is, I think as the court acknowledged here, logical and to expect that that 04 case essentially had been discharged. I think that's what the record here, though limited,
shows. Made, if the 04 case, the 1826, was made consecutive to the earlier cases, the 01 cases, then it wouldn't have been discharged.
Yeah, that's a possibility, Judge, but the actual factual, the way it lays down here is that the 04 case, the resentencing on the 04 revocation actually took place first in January of 08. Then in February of 08, the 01 combined cases, they're resentenced. And then in March of 08, the federal case happens. And so, you know, going back to that first state court case, there would have been nothing to make it consecutive with. The court could only impose the sentence.
You know, it's kind of frustrating because it's an exact thing that that there are documents that show this. They just didn't get included or referred to in the pre-sentence report.
And they wouldn't. If you think about how this happens, again, it happens in every one of our cases when things aren't litigated. You know, parties don't go out and pull. And, you know, it's a big problem, I think, now with the crime of violence cases under the ACC, because we don't always have pulled those cases for the pre-sentence report, because court decisions like Smith come down post sentencing, and we wonder, oh, gosh, we should have pulled those reports to see what recklessness really meant in that case. But in this case, you know, we had essentially an agreement as to what the priors were. No objections essentially to the parts of the pre-sentence report that the court is now concerned about on appeal, at least from the defendant's standpoint, and really no additional record, you know, that we have here. And I think it actually sort of speaks to why there's really not a problem here. It is logical that case was discharged. It's logical for the pre-sentence report writer not to have told the court he could make it concurrent with that matter because it was a discharge.
Yeah, and so we follow your logic and the assumptions we're to make. What Judge Tinder's point is that it's just a lot cleaner if we have the paper. So I realize that sometimes, you know, there could be a lot of paper that's out there, and so you have to weigh how much paper do we really need. But, you know, if the paper were here, end of story, right?
That's right, Judge. I think we probably would have had to go back and supplement the record in some way in the district court to actually have the district court review essentially what it never reviewed in the first place,
exactly.
Which
all I'm saying
was
is
awkward.
In the first instance. So who would pull that, the probation officer, or you would make the request?
Probation officer would pull it, Judge, and then typically if there was a conflict as to that, we would probably pull it ourselves or get copies, and essentially the parties would review it with the court. But because there was no controversy as to that, at the district court level, really only here on appeal, it wasn't done.
The 04 sentence was originally consecutive to those 01 sentences. Is that right? I believe that's correct. I believe the 04 sentence was consecutive to the 01 sentences because I think he was on parole for the 01 sentences when he committed the 04 crime. Is there a rule in Wisconsin on parole revocation that if the sentence was originally consecutive, that the parole revocation is consecutive as well, or is that?
I don't believe so, Judge. But again, if you look at the timing, there was no prior sentence that the defendant was serving for the court to make it essentially consecutive or concurrent with. He just imposes a sentence of 3 months. Subsequent courts then would decide whether it would be consecutive or concurrent. In this case, oddly, the 01 case was after the 04 case, and so that court at that point could determine consecutive or concurrent, and then the federal court as well. If there are no other questions, I would ask that the court affirm the sentence below.
Anything else, Mr. Anderson?
Just simply answer one of Mr. questions, which is, yes, the pre-sentence report reflects that the 2004 case was originally consecutive to any other sentence. Unfortunately, I can't answer the question about Wisconsin law.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Thank you, Mr. Lipscomb. The case will be taken.